Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Randy Kovitz.
That's me.
How you doing?
I'm great, thank you.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear it. You know, I don't even know where to begin with you, man, because
all right.
I was looking at your resume. You have done it all. Film, here in Pittsburgh, Los Angeles, television, Broadway, with the likes of James Earl Jones, John Malkovich, commercials, theater, directing, teaching. Are you content?
No. Never. Why do you think I do so many things? No. I'm chasing fulfillment with all these things, but...
It's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
How do you... Well, where did it begin for you? From Pittsburgh originally?
No. I grew up in Southern California, actually.
Okay.
But I was born in D.C., moved around a lot, and when I was about 8, we landed in Southern California. It all began with the Beatles, actually. My performance career started lip-syncing Beatles songs with cardboard instruments touring my elementary school in fourth grade. And I enjoyed music a lot. But then when I was 14, I was cast in my first play, which was Guys and Dolls. And the moment I walked on stage, I really did know that this is what I wanted to do. And I have been an actor ever since. I've averaged it, you know, 2 or 3 shows a year, at least. Some years I would do, the biggest year was my junior year at Carnegie Mellon when I was a student there, which is how I got to Pittsburgh, by the way. And I did 11 shows that year as an actor. So, but average 2 or 3 shows a year at least. So that's how it started. That was the genesis,
and
so to speak.
The wonderful thing is it appears that Pittsburgh has been able to hang on to your talent. You know, because you hear all the time that to be successful in film or television, you've got to go to L.A., you've got to go to New York. But here you are with us here in Pittsburgh. So what sorcery is this?
Well, I did go to New York for about 10 years after I graduated from Carnegie Mellon. When I graduated, I worked here for about a year. I did a couple of movies for George Romero. I did some commercials. I was in a theater company that was called City Players that eventually became City Theater.
Hmm.
And then I moved to New York for about 10 years. After that, I moved to LA for nearly 20. So I've been to both places, but I always loved Pittsburgh. I was here for college at CMU in the theater department, but I stayed for an extra year and I toured every park and every middle school and every high school in Pittsburgh, and I lived on the north side the last year I was here. So I got a real taste of the place, the people, the culture, even back then, was strong. And I always loved it, and I really did fantasize a lot about coming back to Pittsburgh. And in 2003, I was at the Christmas party for the Los Angeles chapter of the CMU Drama Alumni Association, and I met the head of the department at the time, Liz Bradley, and they needed someone to teach stage combat. You didn't mention that, actually, but that's okay. I'm a fight director as well. In fact, I'm doing company at the Pittsburgh Public just now, and I did Motherfucker with the Hat. Can I say Motherfucker on?
You can say whatever you want.
For Patrick Jordan's company, Bare Bones, just recently. Anyway, I do a lot of fights. But they needed a fight director, so they brought me back here in 2003, and that's where I met the people at Point Park University, And Ron Lindblom and John Shepherd invited me to come and get a master's. And I had always thought about getting a master's because I had tried to teach a number of times and realized that I couldn't without a master's degree. So when I came back to LA, I told my wife, who also graduated from Carnegie Mellon, although not at the same time, and we decided to pull up stakes and move here, and we have never regretted it. We've been here 8 years. We both love it. We've both gotten advanced degrees. We've both thrived in our careers, and I just think Pittsburgh's a great, great place.
So what does it say about this city that somebody can have a very successful career here in film, television, theater?
It depends on what you mean by successful. There's not a lot of money to be made here in any of those things. However, you can put together a living by doing a lot of different things, teaching, staging fights, acting in various things. I also write and do some other things. So that's how I've been able to do it. What was the question?
What does it say about the city that you know, you can be successful? And then you said to me, what do you mean by successful?
The city is very, very encouraging to artists. Mm-hmm. That's the positive part. The part that makes it difficult is that there are a lot of artists here. There are a lot of theater companies. There is a lot of competition for the audience, which is one of the reasons I'm here, is that I'm hoping to get some of that audience for the project we're going to talk about later. But so it's a mixed bag, but it's the part that's good is very, very good. I mean, the artists who live here are fantastic. And some friends of mine who actually have an arts organization and sponsored me for a show that I wrote and did a few years ago, which was kind of a music video spoken word hybrid called Happy to Be Here, that I did down at the Bricolage space. They gave me a space to work in, and they had other artists coming through who were so impressed with Pittsburgh that they decided that the initials PGH for Pittsburgh stand for Personal Goal Haven. And that's how I look at it. I've come here and I've accomplished a lot of personal goals. I've been able to direct movies, write movies. I've learned how to edit. I've learned how to do sound design. It's just a great place for somebody who really wants to grow, and that's why I like it.
Now, you did mention fight choreography, and this is a big part of what keeps you busy. And I think that, you know, a lot of folks who might not be behind the curtain in theater might not realize that you can't just get on stage and swing a sword around or your fists. I mean, there is a lot that goes into, I mean, there's a reason why it's called choreography.
Well, you'd be surprised how many people, including directors, think that all you have to do is just sort of go up there and hit each other. But it is a very specific craft, and it requires a lot of work and thought to make it not only look real, because looking real is fine, but to help tell the story, to make sure that it fits in with the style of the play, to make sure that it's not just about the fight, but about advancing the plot. And the very first priority always is to keep the actors safe.
Yes.
So it's something that I started doing when I was at Carnegie Mellon. I studied with B.H. Barry, who is a world-renowned master of it, and he's still a friend and mentor. And I apprenticed with him when I moved to New York and started doing it there. And I've been very lucky, you know, because I studied with the guy who's the top of the game. And
the fight master.
Yeah. And my career took off from there. And so I have a legitimacy that helps when people are considering using me, which is great.
What do you like to see in a good stage fight?
I think I like to see the characters expressed through the fight. You know, there's nothing worse than seeing some old man, you know, sort of walking on stage with a cane and the sword comes out and he turns into Errol Flynn. He needs to fight like his character fights. I like to see a believable fight that advances the story, reveals character, and is thrilling on top of that. Usually if those first three things are there, all will be there. So
now, if you're ever out at like a bar with a buddy who also does stage combat, you ever get the urge to be like, "Hey, come on, let's get going here."
Well, I have done that. When I was a student at CMU, there was a record store across from Giant Eagle in Squirrel Hill, and we were there in the middle of the night, some buddies of mine and I, and we just started spontaneously fighting and freaked some people out. I've done that. We also staged a fight with B.H. Berry down in Market Square. And we actually alerted the police because we did it for the Pittsburgh Press at the time. Hmm. And there was a big Sunday article about it. And we had blood capsules, and it was two guys fighting over a girl. And it was in the paper, but not a single person tried to stop it. It was quite interesting.
It was really a study in sociology, maybe, right, at the same time. You get funding for that, probably.
But I don't recommend it anymore.
I much prefer that to a flash mob, though. I'm not a fan of flash mobs. I like this, though.
Okay. We'll do one
sometime.
I'll back
that, yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, we can take a lesson. But you've got a great balance between your on-camera work and your stage work. What do you feel is the fundamental difference between acting for the camera versus acting for the stage?
Well, I didn't say this, but I quote this a lot in this very room where I actually teach. On stage, you can give a performance. On camera, you must have an experience. I just watched Captain Phillips today, and I don't know if you've seen that movie.
This is the Tom Hanks.
Okay. The final scene after he is, I won't give it away, I'll give it away, he's rescued. We all know that. It's about based on a real thing.
I haven't seen it. Did he get a Golden Globe?
And he did not.
I didn't watch.
He was brilliant. And the thing that just touched me so much was in the final scene when he's rescued, he's being examined on board ship by a Navy Corps man. It's a woman, but I guess you'd call him a corpsman. And he's in shock. And his performance was so profoundly affecting. He was so amazing. I cannot believe for a second that he wasn't actually experiencing something there. And back in the 1800s in France at the Comédie Française, there's a famous story about one of the great French actors, Courteline, who started to weep during a performance. And afterwards, he called the cast together backstage and apologized and promised that they would never see real emotion again from him. And then, of course, Stanislavski came along and changed a lot of that. And today, emotion is the gold standard. I do think it's sometimes overly valued, and I think that actors mistake emotion sometimes for good acting. But the fact is, it is amazing to watch on screen, and I think that's the biggest difference, is that emotion on stage is great too, and not just emotion, but great acting on stage. But on camera, anything that you do that is at all pushed or forced or anything like that looks false. Whereas on stage, you can get away with a little bit more. So I think that's the main difference.
And, you know, we should mention, too, that, yes, you do teach courses in mm-hmm. acting for the camera here at Mosser Studio, which is where we're shooting the interview today.
I teach here. I also teach the seniors at Carnegie Mellon. I teach acting for the camera for them. And then I teach directing to the film students at Point Park. So I'm a busy guy.
Yeah. What do you do to unwind?
Well, I'm doing a solo show, so I unwind by learning my lines. So.
Really?
No. This is a good way to unwind. Martinis are
very
always good.
Cheers to that. Indeed.
I don't really get a lot of time to unwind, and if you talk to my wife, she will probably complain about that. I'm a bit of a workaholic, and over the holidays, like even on Christmas Day, I was writing a screenplay over the holidays, so I wrote on Christmas Day. But I like the creative process. To me, that's thrilling. To me, that is fulfilling. So I would love a vacation sometime in some beach-like place with tropical drinks with umbrellas in them. That would be very nice.
I should have called ahead for this.
That's okay.
Next time. Next time.
Olives
indeed.
Are fine.
Good. So yes, we will have the privilege here in Pittsburgh of seeing you in a one-man show Which will be performed at Pittsburgh Playwrights Theater.
That's correct.
Produced by 12 Piers Theater Company.
That's right.
And what can we expect from this venture?
This is a solo show that I have been a bit obsessed with for a few years. It's called Underneath the Lintel. It's by Glenn Berger, who is perhaps most famous for being Julie Taymor's collaborator in writing Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark on Broadway.
Is that what brought you to this script?
No, actually, I had heard of it before Spider-Man, and I saw Glenn Berger do a reading of it in New York in 2009. He actually understudied the original production, and I met him afterwards, and I was blown away by this story. In a nutshell, it's the story of a reclusive Dutch librarian who discovers a library book that's been returned 113 years late. He becomes obsessed with the person who had this book and starts to follow clues that lead him all over the world, and he discovers connections to an ancient myth and ruins his life, but at the same time awakens his spirit. And it is a fantastic piece of writing. I've been reading it and digging into it for a couple of years, and now I start rehearsals Tuesday. So we open February 7th, previews start February 5th. It's about an 80-minute monologue, but it's a detective story. I usually don't love one-person shows, but this is really a play that pulls you along as the new discoveries emerge and as the character and the audience find out this mystery. And I think it's a terrific piece, and I'm really looking forward to performing it.
Now, is your approach to a one-man show any different than your approach would be to a full cast piece?
It's very different in that there is no one to work off of. The people you work off are your audience. So I don't get to really, really start digging into the play as far as the exchange of energy that happens between one actor or another, or an actor in the audience, until we start previews. So I'm doing some open rehearsals with people I respect to come in and watch a little bit. I've also hired a co-director, because I have such a strong vision of the show. I was going to try to do it all on my own, but luckily, common sense prevailed, and we have a wonderful guy named Cameron Knight, who is a new faculty mm-hmm. member at Carnegie Mellon, who's a wonderful actor himself, very talented guy, and we both have very similar training, because he came out of the University of Delaware theater program, which is run by people who trained me at Carnegie Mellon back when I went there. So we have a lot of simpatico, and we've been working together, but we start rehearsals officially on Tuesday, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Nervous?
Thrilling. I'm excited. I'm thrilled. I'll probably be nervous, but it's 80 minutes of me talking. But I'm used to that. I had a spoken word band in Los Angeles for about a decade called Lies Like Truth, where I had these long rants with a band behind me. So I've been on stage sometimes with a band behind me, sometimes by myself doing this stuff a lot. So I'm comfortable with that. But this material is very challenging. And it's a Dutch accent, which is a very obscure accent, and I've been working on that a lot.
Can you give us a little sample?
Well, Dutch is a little like German, only it's a little, well, it's hard to say, but it's very formal, and it also depends on who taught the Dutch person English, whether it was an English person, in which case you would say last, and you would have soft R's, or if you were taught by an American, you might say last and have hard R's, but you would still have certain things that you would have to do as a Dutch person. So anyway,
that's also a great example of the meticulous thought and research that needs to go into approaching a character, namely their accent.
Very much
just
so.
As you applied to fight choreography when you do that. There's it really is a science as well as an art sometimes.
It takes a lot of work and a lot of digging into things. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to a lot of examples of Dutch speakers, real speakers online. And now there's this amazing thing on YouTube. I can't remember what it's called. But it's this accent thing that they do. If people I'll let you know later when I find out, and people can.
Is it that thing where, you know, people go and record themselves from a certain place in the country, and you can go on and sort of find?
Well, there's IDEA, which is the International Dialect Something Archive, which has real speakers recorded on that, and that is great. But this is just this sort of viral thing where people do their accents and they just speak and they read this list of words in their own accent, and so you can get all the vowel and consonant changes. It's terrific.
Now, really, for someone who has studied dialects, can you describe to me what the heck this Pittsburgh accent is?
There are a lot of theories about that, but I think it has to do a lot with Slavic roots and German and Irish all kind of mixed up. But it's hard to tell. It's very Southern in some ways, and at other times it's very guttural.
I've heard Welsh, too.
Could be.
Somebody had said could at be. One point. But there's nothing else really like it in America, and it hasn't really permeated into mainstream media. You know, you hear the Chicago dialect out there in, you know, film and television, you hear the New York, you hear the Midwestern, but, you know, you're not here in Pittsburgh. It's very isolated.
It's similar to Baltimore a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
A little bit. But it's difficult. I mean, Christian Bale, who I have enormous respect for, made one attempt at it in Out of the Furnace. He said yins at one point.
This is a British actor saying yins.
Well, that's cool.
In fact, I think Nancy and I talked about that on our interview here. We were waiting to see, you know, how his accent was.
Well, that was it.
Stopped at yins.
It didn't ruin the movie, though. He was great.
And just one yins.
One yins. That was it.
Wow.
Unfortunately. No, people, I just think that we're sort of isolated, and I don't think that it plays all that well in other places. We love it.
Yeah, we're proud of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But most actors or artists have kind of polished it out of their system in Pittsburgh. You know,
most of them. Yeah.
And if they haven't, they can come take a class with you, and you can maybe.
Well, I don't teach dialects, but I can point them in the right direction.
What's next for you after this show?
The next show I'm doing is Pantaglaze with Quantum Theater, directed by Jed Harris, written by Jay Ball. It's an adaptation of a 1930s Belgian play by a playwright named Michel de Gelderode.
There's another accent for you.
Yeah, well, I'm playing, they've adapted it, and I'm playing Pantaglaze, which is cool.
That's a cool name.
Yeah. They're basically updating it and setting it in a Prague-like place in a. I'm not sure when it is. I've only had one reading of it, but they're basing it on when Allen Ginsberg went to Prague to become the May King in the 1965, I think. And so I'm playing an American poet, which is cool because Jay knows my spoken word work, and I think that he's going to be writing some stuff that is in a similar style. And it's going to be a great adventure. So I'm looking forward to that. Like I said, I'm also doing the Fights for Company, and I just shot a video for Carnegie Mellon for their seniors, so we're going to be editing that this month. And that's it.
You know, I forget this, but you and I were in a show together.
Yes, we were, full disclosure.
And in all the preparation I did for this interview, I actually had forgotten that until just recently.
We did Mother Courage at Point Park.
For the Rep Company, yes.
When was that? And it was directed by John Shepard, and it starred Laurie Clatcher
as Mother Courage. Music by Doug Levine.
Yep.
And I kind of melted into the background. You were not the chaplain.
I was the cook.
The cook, that's right. That's right.
I had tattoos and wore a cool hat. No, they were temporary. I have the pictures, though.
Well, the pictures last forever. The pictures last a lifetime. But yeah, they had to have been, 2004, 5?
No. I think it was 2008.
Jeez.
Or 7, yeah.
Time's flying.
Yep.
Indeed. Any film projects coming up?
We'll see. I just wrote a short script, and if I can get funding for it, I would like to do it. And I have a feature that I'm trying to do, but, you know, getting a feature film done is kind of like winning the lottery. So
yeah.
I'll keep trying. I've been a director for hire for a few things, which is really fun. I really enjoy directing for film, for camera, basically. I did a project called 17 Days, which was the Carnegie Mellon Department of Social and Decision Sciences got a big grant from the
what is
health
that even?
And some big government agency. And they basically... Uh-oh. Oh, excuse me. I'm going to have to get this.
Oh, yes. Agent calling.
Yes, hello. Yeah? What are you wearing? Nice. Great. Kidding.
As some
hey,
agent.
Vince, I'm being interviewed right now on the show with Brian, and you're calling me right in the middle
That's
of the interview.
Vince Ventura?
Man. It's the producer of 12 Tears. Say hi,
you're
Vince.
You're kidding me.
I'm going to put you on speakerphone here. Oh, no, he did. Was he not there? Oh, well. He must
that's
have hung
a,
up.
That's a riot.
I think he hung up. Well, I think he was, like, freaked out and hung up.
Well, I didn't even know this was a call-in show.
Well, it is now.
That
so,
is
you
great.
Know, let's just hook the
that
mic up
great.
To my phone.
Callers, the number is 412. That's hysterical.
Yeah.
But
so
everybody's chomping at the bit, though, I guess, to see this show. Your producers call. They want to, you know,
I
there's
guess.
Energy.
I hope so. We have just so your viewers know, we have a Facebook page underneath the lintel. There are several underneath the lintel pages because it's been done about 200 times around the world. But this is the Pittsburgh premiere. So if they go on Facebook to that page, they can, or to 12pierstheater.org, they can get tickets and more information. And that would be... great. Please come. I think you'll like it.
Yes, and you'll hear 80 minutes of this beautiful voice in a Dutch accent.
But I'm doing it in a Dutch accent. It
yes.
won't sound the same.
Any accent. You
Thanks.
Have a very rich tone.
Well, thank you. I can't take credit for it. Both my father and my brother were both radio announcers, so I kind of inherited this.
So is that something that you either have or you don't? Can you train that?
You can train it, absolutely, but a lot of what your voice sounds like is about the architecture of your face, your sinuses, the amount of space you have, where you resonate. And, you know, I've had a lot of voice training, but, you know, when I'm tired, it sounds a lot better. And I worked for about 11 hours on a film set yesterday, so I'm a little tired today.
Well, we should prop you up when you're exhausted all the time. We get your best work. Indeed.
Oh, here.
Oh,
I think he left a voicemail, so let's put it on speakerphone and see what Vince had to say. Okay.
It was rude of me. I didn't bring a drink for him.
No, it's okay. Okay, Vince. Here we go. Wait. Okay. That we don't want to hear that. He's been negotiating something. All right. Producer stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Showbiz talk.
Yeah,
showbiz
yeah,
talk.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Need a cigar for that.
Bravo. Well, you know, I did want to ask you what working on a soap opera was like.
It can be fun. I did a lot of soap opera work in New York in the 70s and 80s. I worked as an actor, and I also worked as stunt coordinator on soap operas. The most interesting thing I think I did was One Life to Live. I did a fight between a guy and his evil twin. And that was interesting because we had a stuntman in a wig and the same costume. We did one half of the fight from one side, and then we switched to another angle, and that guy switched to the other character in costume. And then I got to sit in on the editing. But soaps in the old days were different than they were right before their demise, in that it was a very long day. You'd get called at 7 a.m. for what they called dry rehearsal upstairs in a rehearsal room. Then you'd go downstairs and do camera blocking. That would last till about noon. You'd take lunch. You'd come back, get into makeup and hair, and do a dress rehearsal. And then around 4:30 or 4 o'clock, you'd start shooting the show. And they shot it in the order that they, like if they had three scenes in one set, they wouldn't do them all at once. You'd start on this one set, then they'd move all the cameras to the next scene and you'd shoot that, and then you'd come back. And so you were out at maybe 8, 9 o'clock, and then you'd be back at 7 a.m. the next morning. And the stars of the show sometimes had 20 to 40 pages of dialogue to learn every day. So it was crazy. When I first started, they had teleprompters, and then I worked in LA and they had cue cards. And then eventually they wound up just calling you right before your scene, going to the set, shooting all the scenes on that set. So it's interesting. I mean, I think it's the lowest production value of any TV shot, you know, and the highest being television commercials,
yeah,
because it's the most money spent per second. But it's great training ground. It can also be bad for actors because I think actors get into some bad habits on soaps.
Well, I was going to say, is there an acting style to soap operas? Like, did they ever tell you, hey, Randy, could you not act so well in this scene for us, please?
I wish I could say they had, but they never did. But, you know, there are certain things, like the old Gary Oldman thing where he talks about evil people and how you deal with your eyes with an evil look. And people do this a lot on soaps where you look up and then look up with your eyes afterwards. So this is the evil look. Right. Yeah.
I felt the evil.
I could feel your trembling.
Yes. I'm going to have a drink.
Yeah,
after
please
that
do. I'll finish mine too. I'm going to need another one.
That was a good Gary Oldman, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, have you ever met him?
No, I never have. No. Yeah.
Well,
no.
You know, I ask because you know you're in some pretty well-known circles.
I've met some wonderful people in my life. I cleaned Bob Hope's golf club when I was 8 years old. I followed him around at a celebrity golf tournament.
And you knew you had it made after that. Once you polished Bob Hope's golf club.
He pulled a plug of grass out and said, here, kid, you look like you need something to do. This will keep you busy. Just wipe the mud off my golf club. And I put that piece of grass in my scrapbook.
You still have it?
No, I threw it away when we moved here. But I was trying to practice non-attachment and get rid of a lot of stuff.
Bob Hope gave you grass.
He did. He gave me grass. Yeah.
That's a story.
No papers, though, so I couldn't do anything with it.
Well, you know, he was frugal, I hear. He and old Jack Benny there. Good. Great.
Well, thank you so much for having me as a guest.
Thank you. This has been delightful.
I appreciate it.
And we are all looking forward to seeing Underneath the Lintel, a one-man tour de force.
Well, it's a solo play. You guys can call it whatever you want.
I'm intrigued. I will be there, and we encourage all of our listeners and viewers to indulge in it as well.
Randy, thank you, Brian.
Thank you,
sir. It's
been
a pleasure.
Good chatting. In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Bergvivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Bergvivant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvivant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.